And now another no-brainer money-saving tip from Progressive.
Marcus, what happened?
I was changing my oil and I spilled some on the floor.
Oh, well, use these $50 bills to wipe it up.
Perfect. Got any more?
Yeah, take a couple hundred.
Stop. Instead of using money, use an old rag. And here's a better tip from Progressive on how not to waste money. Don't pay too much for car insurance. Drivers who switch and save could save hundreds. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary.
This episode is brought to you by Health IQ, a very special life insurance company that gives health-conscious individuals the best life insurance rates and quotes. Learn about what they can do for you specifically at healthiq.com/olddog. That's all lowercase letters and dog is spelled D-A-W-G. That's healthiq.com/olddog.
In a world where jobs are how most people make money, one man, one desire, one challenge, dares to break the mold. Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where we don't work for money. Money works for us. Coming soon, viewer discretion advised.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where cash flow is king. Real estate investing, the means, so you can enjoy your retirement dreams. This is the show where we cut right to the chase. No sales pitch, no long monologues, just simple how-to real estate investing advice, so you can earn the passive income you need to enjoy your retirement today. And now, your host and chief old dog, Bill Manassero.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network. I'm your host, Bill Manassero, and this is the show where 50-plussers and anyone else who wants to join us get solid, no-sales-pitch real estate investing advice to help generate real cash flow. This podcast airs twice weekly on Mondays and Fridays, and if you aren't already a subscriber, go to iTunes, type in Old Dogs, spelled D-A-W-G, find our podcast and subscribe. Well, hi, old dogs. How's everybody doing? We have a great show for you today. We have a gentleman named Ben Leibovich, and he is a real estate investor, author, blogger, and internet entrepreneur. I mean, there's some interesting stuff we're going to hear here. His background is he was born in Russia. He lived in Ohio and recently relocated to Arizona, where he lives with his wife, Patricia, and twins, Aaron and Isabella. Ben is a professionally trained violinist. I don't know if he's going to play any tunes today, but we'll find out. But his entry into real estate was precipitated, actually, by a medical condition. And we're going to hear his story in a few minutes. He is also the creator of Cashflow Freedom University, a great place for people to learn about real estate investing. So without much further ado, I'd like to welcome Ben. How are you, my friend?
I'm very well. Thank you for hosting me, Bill. How are you?
I am doing great. This beautiful day in Southern California. We're enjoying some nice weather here, but it's probably just as good, maybe even better in Arizona right now.
It's fantastic. I'm sitting in this office. I got two balcony doors open. It's breezy, and it beats the hell out of what I had in Ohio. I can tell you that right now. And I'm sure people from Midwest are listening, and I love you all dearly. But you should all come to Arizona. Let me sell you some property. We'll all be happy.
I love it. Well, Ben, I gave a little bit of background on you, but really not that much. And I would love for you to just give us your introduction to real estate investing. I mean, you know, give us where'd you come from? How did you end up in this strange world of REI that we live in?
So I was pushed into real estate, and Essentially, I was training as a professional violinist. I was at the University of Cincinnati College Conservatory of Music. Probably at that time, I'm sure, one of the top five schools in the nation. I don't know where it ranks today, but very serious place for serious people that study music to be stage performers, artists, orchestra musicians, soloists, such things. And I think it was the first year of my master's degree, events transpired that culminated with a diagnosis of multiple sclerosis for me. And that was a difficult period for obvious reasons because I'd been playing the fiddle since the age of five. It's all I knew. It's all I wanted to know, or at least it's all I thought I wanted to know. But it was taken away because the doctors basically said, hey, listen, we don't want you to freak out. We don't want you to do anything stupid, but you are going to be in a wheelchair. We can't tell you when. We can't tell you how soon. We really don't understand this disease all that much. But we do know enough to tell you you're going to be in a wheelchair. Well, it was a pretty dark period. A certain amount of depression was involved with that. The depression was, you know, kind of twofold. One, the love of my life, which was the violin, the music, was just taken away from me. But also, you know, the financial aspect of it hit a wall. You know, this was how, with the violin in my hands, I was going to be earning a living. And I wasn't going to be doing that anymore because it's hard to be on stage and then your hands quit working as they had done for me. So I didn't really know where to go, what to do. And so I just started reading. I just started reading. And real estate kind of happened by default. Because of the passivity of income stemming from rental property, because of OPM, other people's money, because of leverage, because I simply didn't have the magnitude of thought to be able to go in to a real business. I don't, you know, a lot of people like to preach that real estate is some kind of magical, sophisticated thing. It's very difficult in terms of perspective, but in terms of business, it's not. It's the easiest business you can get into. That's why so much money has been made in real estate for so many generations. So I could wrap my head around that, but I couldn't start Facebook. I couldn't start Twitter. At that point, I didn't have the intellectual worth. And so by default, I ended up in real estate, searching for that thing we call passive cash flow. So that's the long and the short of it.
What was your first entry into it? What was the first actual investment that you made in the real estate area?
I bought a single family house. I set up a line of credit on my primary. I had enough on that line of credit to either purchase the house or to rehab the house, but I didn't have enough to do both. So I approached a friend of mine, a person that was better to do at that point. And, you know, I offered him to finance the thing and I would pay him upon, you know, the completion of the flip. I kind of looked at it as a flip at that point in time. And he ended up buying it off of me. So essentially, it ended up being what you would call a wholesale deal. I backed into that by accident. I wasn't looking for it to be that. And that was the first money I made. And then I went ahead and spent that money paying off student loans. What a brilliant move that was. See, what I'm telling you, I didn't have that much of business acumen. I'm not lying to you. Mm-hmm. I made this money and then I threw it right back at loans, which generated, hell, you know, 5% return on investment. Whereas I could have, should have done something very different. But anyhow, that was the first one. But the whole flipping and wholesaling thing, I knew that it wasn't going to be my focus because of MS. I needed the passivity of it all was key to me. And so I knew that I had to build out systems to, you know, to more or less just be dealing with rental income. So that's where I ended up.
So you moved more into the buy and hold sphere
yeah.
then?
Okay. Yeah.
And so what you keep buying single family homes? Did you?
No, I'm in small apartments. Most of my portfolio is small apartments. But yeah, it's just, you know, where I was in Ohio in that particular submarket, SFRs didn't work so well, so I went with apartments.
Tell us just about that entry into that. Did you start with duplexes? Did you, you know, you look?
I mean, the first deal I did was interesting because a guy was selling a duplex and a triplex right next door to one another. And he was, as I later found out, 1031 exchanging that into a different investment in another part of the state. He was selling that, and so we structured something very creative. One thing you need to know about me is that I am all about no money down. That's how I do everything I do. That was no exception. I purchased both of those buildings, and that's how the whole thing started.
Okay, can you tell us the details of how that happened? And that was a no money down deal.
Yeah, that was a no money down deal. So I structured a contract whereby he had two buildings. I would buy the first one first, and then the money would roll right into the second building, right in escrow, from one table to another, so to speak. And I had a private investor finance the acquisition. So the same money that bought the first one also rolled it over and bought the second one. And then I refinanced both of them to pay off, you know, the original lien and the interest. So to me, that was a no money out of pocket. And of course, in the middle of it, I did a little rehab and, you know, increased the rents, hopefully to help buildings appraise for more, which they did. And of course, everything appraised for more in 2006, if you remember.
Oh, yikes.
If it could breathe and it could move, it appraised for more. But that's how that went.
Wow. This is in 2006, huh? Oh,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah, I'm almost an old dog.
After that experience, I think it would have made you into an old dog, I'm sure. Did you use the same investor from before? Did you have to find a new investor? How did you go about that?
No, I had, like today, at this point in time, my infrastructure is big enough to where if I need to raise funds, it's a different kind of process. Back in the day, it was all people that I knew. They were different investors for these deals, but they were all people I knew from another business or socially or something like that. So the thing to understand about investors on the small scale, if you're trying to finance a smaller deal, and if you're specifically if you're just starting out, the thing you need to understand is when big guys talk about private placements and syndicated deals and things like that, they're attracting much more sophisticated investors, people that are much more adept to analyzing all of the moving parts. When you are looking, when you are young or you are young to the sport of real estate, and you're looking for somebody to provide you some cash so you can finance a deal, they are there because they know you. They like you. Yes, the deal has to be good enough. Obviously, the deal has to be good enough. But they're not there because they are so sophisticated that they have access to the private placements memorandums that are available from some of the biggest syndicators. They don't necessarily have access to that. And so what we're talking about here is personal relationships. Now, you have to be cognizant that SEC is pretty specific about who you can ask for money and who you can't and what that needs to look like. But it does boil down to the people who know you and love you and trust you and want to help you. They are taking a chance on you. They're taking a risk on you. Why? Not because you're some kind of genius investor, but because they want to help you and they're willing to do it because the payoff, financially speaking, seems to be there. So they go ahead with it. It's a different frame of mind. You need to understand your audience in order to negotiate your way into these deals.
Just to reiterate, you'd consider yourself a buy and hold, or did you flip that property too? Or
No, I'm buy and hold.
Okay. So you still have those properties today?
I still have those today.
And they're holding their own for the most part?
They are doing well, yes.
Oh, great. So that was 2006. Did the crash impact you at all after you know, you had purchased that or other properties?
Yeah, it did, but not in the way you think. Right when the crash happened, I had enough properties to where I couldn't qualify for Fannie and Freddie notes, but I wasn't big enough to where I could go to a commercial portfolio lender. So I was in this no man's land where traditional financing, you know, institutional financing was difficult for me. So I went and did some other things. I just kind of let some of those notes season, some of the mortgages season. I let the calamity boil over. And by then, I was able to go to a commercial lender who would then look more seriously at me because I had those properties for a few years and I'd managed them and I did okay.
Did you fund any of those properties during that time 100% with creative financing, other people's
money?
Yeah,
everything I've ever done has been creative finance 100%. Look, even when you do, if you're buying a 300 unit apartment building and you're doing a PPM and you're doing what's called a Reg D syndication, okay? What you are doing is, you know, you have a general partnership whereby the general partner goes and procures the institutional financing. But the other partners, the limited partners, come in with the cash. So to the general partner, this is a no money down deal. To the syndicator, this is a no money down deal. So it all boils down to, even at the very, very highest levels of this game, it all boils down to no money down financing. Now, can, you know, if you have $1 million in the bank, can you leverage it against $3 million a loan and go buy yourself a 400 unit? Well, forget that. That's never going to happen. But a good quality 120 unit for that money at 6.5 cap, you know, of course you can. Of course you can. But most players don't have that capacity. So everything at all levels of real estate, most of the time, seems to come down to creative finance in one way or that.
Right. You're buying, you have been buying since then pretty consecutively. Would you mind sharing sort of where you're at, how many doors you have currently?
I sold out of a few things in Ohio. I just relocated to Arizona about 9 months ago. I only have, at the moment, I think 21 doors. I have a 10 unit. I have a 5 unit. I have 3 singles, and I have a triplex.
Okay.
And that's all I have in my portfolio right now. Well, I also have a vacation rental unit in Arizona, but that's a different subject.
Move into our wrap it up section.
Sure.
Hello, fellow old dogs. Before we jump into our wrap it up session, I just wanted to let you know that an important part of being a successful real estate investor is knowing how to regularly reduce expenses. It's a big part of what I do every day to maintain a healthy real estate portfolio. Well, I try to do the same thing with my personal finances as well. When I heard about a health insurance company that gave special rates to those of us old dogs who try to eat right, exercise, and stay healthy, I got very stoked. Health IQ gives health-conscious people the best life insurance rates, end quotes. Learn about what they can do for you specifically at healthiq.com/old dog. That's all lowercase letters, and dog is spelled D-A-W-G. That's healthiq.com/old dog. Check them out.
If you are ready for that, we're going to jump in, and that way you can share your knowledge of various resources that people can access to get educated, which something is very important. So if you are ready, I'm going to jump right in. Are you ready, Ben?
Sure.
All right. Favorite real estate book?
Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
All right.
Oh, I have another one. Okay. It's by... I think his name is Dickerson.
Oh, yeah. Nickerson.
Yeah. That's fantastic book.
I don't think you can get it in print anymore. That's an old one. That's like how I turned 1,000 into, you know, 10 million.
Yeah. And I think they've done several reprints of it. But the thing that's wonderful about both of these books is they're not concerned with specifics, but they are concerned with the frame of mind, which I think is huge. We don't talk about that enough. I think that's huge, the big picture. So, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, it kind of opened the world to me. And that book by Nickerson, in a lot of ways, also did.
Great. How about your favorite business book?
I don't necessarily read business books, but more like, again, motivational books or frame of mind books. Right now, I'm in the middle of Jack Canfield's The Success Principles, and I think it's pretty good. I don't agree with everything, and I haven't internalized everything, but there's enough meat on that bone to where I can recommend it. The Success Principles.
What about your most valuable website for success, other than your own?
Bigger Pockets obviously has played a big role in my life. I don't know specifically that it has been a vehicle for learning for me, but it has been a vehicle for developing lifelong relationships from which then I learned. So it wasn't necessarily anything stated on the website as much as it was an opportunity to meet some people whom I respect and admire and learn from. So that's on one end. On the second end, I'm pretty prolific with the amount of writing I've done there, so I try to give back. And it's such a large community, it's kind of easy to give back.
That's
so
awesome.
I would say biggerpockets.com.
Great. I love that one too. How about favorite app?
I have two favorite apps. One of them is from VRBO. The other one is from Airbnb. And what they do is they do a little ding ding on my phone when somebody gives me money. So that's always good. So
that's great.
I like those
that's
apps. I also like an app from Stripe.com, which is a credit card processing company. And it does the same thing. When it goes ding ding, I know I got some money. So I like those kinds of apps.
How about your favorite quote?
I have a lot of quotes. I want to give you a quote by somebody who's actually still living. I may be butchering it. A good friend of mine who is also a mentor, he's still with me, his name's Ted, has always said, from a distance, stumbling blocks look a lot like building blocks.
Oh, that's good. I like that. How about this one? If you lost everything you had and all you had was $1,000, what would you do to relaunch your real estate investing?
Well, that's very simple. I'd find an investment and I would raise the money and I would do the deal.
Okay, so you really wouldn't need $1,000 for the most part.
I really wouldn't.
Okay, that's good. Okay, well, that was our wrap it up session. I think one thing, you know, people are going to want to know is how can they find out more about you? How can they reach you and get information about what you do? And you could tell us a little bit about what that is.
My website is www.justaskbenwhy.com. Just ask Ben Why, just like it sounds. What I do is I do what I can to help people understand real estate, learn the dynamics without any additional color or hoorays or any particular excitement. It's a tool in the bag. It's a highly useful tool, but it's also a dangerous tool. And if you're going to play the game, you need to be very educated. I created a course called Cashflow Freedom University. It's on my website. And I charge a few $100 for the same thing that gurus charge $30,000 for. And I want to believe that I make more of a real impact. Judging by the reviews on the website, I would think this is a true statement. I like people. I enjoy people. I'm a conservative guy at my core. I teach people not to lose, and I teach people what not to lose looks like. And then if you want to take it from there and take it by the, you know what, and do it, great. And that's what I do.
Awesome. Great. Well, Ben, I do really thank you for being on. I think it's good. I think what you presented are things that people have to consider that are considering going into real estate investing. So I think that there's some good meat there. We have a tradition here that we do on every show. We have our guests close us out with a best old hound dog howl that they can give. So I'm going to now give you that great opportunity to just give us your best old hound dog howl. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, go for it. All right. That was good. That was good.
I'm a real estate guy, an internet guy, a dog howler. I am not.
Well, we're not going to hold that against you.
please.
Well, Ben, thanks so much for being on. I really appreciate it. And I do appreciate all the things that you've done. And hopefully people can stay in contact with you by going to askbenwhy.com.
Just ask Ben Why.com.
Okay. All right. Well, gosh, I want to also thank all of our old dog listeners out there for joining us. I know there's a lot of other things that you could be doing right now, but the fact that you've taken the time to join us means a lot, and we really appreciate it. Please note, old dog listeners, everything presented here, including any kind of links that were mentioned in our discussion, can be accessed through our detailed show notes on the Old Dogs website at olddogsreinetwork.com/blog. So just to look for the episode with Ben Leibovich. And we thank you for today. Thanks that you've joined us. Remember, cash flow is king, real estate investing the means. And until next time, keep moving forward and may God bless.
Thank you very much for visiting the Old Dogs REI Network. We would greatly appreciate if you would stop by iTunes and let us know what you think of the show. We would love if you could subscribe to the podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and write a review. The more ratings and reviews we receive, the more visible the podcast will be to others. Thank you.
Now another no-brainer money-saving tip from Progressive.
Marcus, what happened?
I was changing my oil and I spilled some on the floor.
Oh, well, use these $50 bills to wipe it up.
Perfect. Got any more?
Yeah, take a couple hundred.
Stop. Instead of using money, use an old rag. And here's a better tip from Progressive on how not to waste money. Don't pay too much for car insurance. Drivers who switch and save could save hundreds. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary.